This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
So, very exciting. We're going to start the show with something we don't normally do. We're going to start the show with a big guest today. That's right. Just a matter of moments, our buddy Senator Dave McCormick's going to call in. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Busy day in Washington. The president welcoming the prime minister of the United Kingdom. And they'll be having a news conference shortly at the White House. But I got an email saying that Senator McCormick had a quick opening in his schedule. He thought of us first, and we're honored to welcome back to the show our buddy, United States Senator Dave McCormick. How are you, my friend?
Hey, Rich. How you doing?
Good. It never gets old saying senator to you.
you don't get tired of saying it, and I don't get tired of hearing it. It's good to be with you.
A lot I want to ask you about, but first thing, you and Dina together putting out something on a very important topic, very near and dear to my heart, which is mentorship, a series of books and I believe videos as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we put out when the book comes out April 1st, we just announced it, and it's just basically the key message is that every successful person has a couple people they can point to that helped them be where they are. And we found that through interviewing lots of successful folks, and it was certainly the case for Dean and me. And so the key message is you don't have to be a famous person to change the world. You just have to help someone become their best selves, and if we had a little more focus on that, it'd be a better country and a better world.
Excellent. Well, congratulations. I think it's an incredibly important thing. I talk about mentoring all the time. I've certainly had mentors in this business, and I wouldn't be here without them. So I completely agree.
We did it during COVID. The project started during COVID because our six kids were home with us and everybody was disconnected. And that's when we thought about it. So the book's just coming out now, and your listeners can get to it at whobelievedinyoubook.com.
WhoBelievedInYouBook.com. Excellent. Well, I believed in you many years ago when you first decided you were going to run for U.S. Senate, and I knew you'd get there, and you're there. So give us the viewpoint, if you would, Senator, from Washington. Number of issues. Let's start, though, with foreign policy. The president saying Zelensky coming to the White House tomorrow, and obviously with the prime minister of the UK today talking about it, looking like, and when the prime minister said it, he said President Trump is enabling peace. And I was very happy to hear that.
Yeah, and I think that's the right only President Trump coming in campaigned on this, saying the killing has to stop between Russia and Ukraine, and laying the groundwork for an agreement, which I hope, and I put a lot of money on President Trump's ability to do this, a deal that will bring peace and security to the region, a deal that will put a much higher burden on the Europeans for paying for security, a deal that will give the Ukrainians the assurance that that Russia won't be invading in the future. You know, President Putin was the aggressor that has been the aggressor over more than a decade, and will give them the confidence they need. And listen, this is a guy in President Trump that negotiated the release of Mark Vogel 22 days in. So I put a lot of stock on him laying the groundwork to be able to get this deal done. And, you know, President Trump said, and Pete Hegseth said, that Ukraine will not in the foreseeable future be a member of NATO. And I agree with that as well. That's going to be a precondition to make this work for everybody.
Good. And that's very important to Russia, obviously, and getting Russia to go along with it. I think this comes at an important time for Pennsylvania, because now that we've lifted that ridiculous ban on liquid natural gas, I mean, Putin's been making a fortune selling liquid natural gas while the United States has not. And it's key, obviously, to the Commonwealth.
Absolutely. I mean, this is of the many things that President Biden did so poorly. I think the energy policy was a complete disaster, because by pausing or making it very difficult to get permits for natural gas exploration, we hurt our national security by making us a net energy importer. We hurt our economy. These are great, high-paying jobs for Pennsylvania, great opportunity. And it also hurt our environment, because that natural gas is the key to clean energy around the world. So what President's done with these, President Trump has done with these executive orders is incredible. It unlocks, begins to unlock that. The permitting reform is what we need. I was with Doug Burgum, the Secretary of the Interior, yesterday, who leads the Energy Council. And we talked about the need to streamline the permitting process. And that's going to be key to getting big investment in Pennsylvania, which is going to create great jobs. And that's number one on the list for the things that we need to do for Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to sit down with Secretary Burgum last week. I got invited to the White House for their media row. Really enjoyed chatting with him. I mean, what a down-to-earth guy he is. Smart as a whip, and really just great ideas about energy. And I think he's definitely the right man for the job. And Interior makes sense, too, because so much of federal land is what we're talking about here for drilling and fracking.
Yeah, we talked about last night. He said there's more than 500 million acres of land, about 30% of the land mass of the United States. And so we can do two things at the same time. We can preserve our incredible national parks, our the natural beauty. A lot of that land is under the Bureau of Land Management. We have the ability to have grazing rights. We have the ability to lease it for natural gas exploration, and do that in a way that really, really increases our energy production at a time when energy demand is going through the roof, but also protects the environment. And so the idea that's been, you know, said in the papers recently that this is going to be bad for our natural environment, there's nobody better to lead the charge than Doug Burgum. He's a sportsman. He's an environmentalist. He's an energy governor. He's a tech CEO, and he's a guy that has the president's trust. I think he's going to be a spectacular Secretary of Interior at a time where that job is probably the most important that it's been in a century.
Senator Dave McCormick's with us. It's great to have him on the show right now. I also had the opportunity to speak to Secretary Brooke Rollins last week when I was at the White House. I know you're all over this. We keep hearing about egg prices, Senator, and I told my wife today, I said, hit up Costco and load up, you know, and I mean, I'm sure I'm probably contributing to the problem here, but
It's a real problem, and it's a real problem for Pennsylvania. You know, we have a huge ag industry. It's the number one industry in our Commonwealth, and the most jobs are associated with agriculture. And the poultry industry in particular is huge. In the last month or so, we've had to kill 2.4 million chickens. And these are mostly at laying farms, egg farms that are a big driver of egg production across the country. And that's bad on a number of different levels. It obviously puts a huge burden on these poultry farmers, and it drives up the price of eggs, you know, from $2 a dozen to $8 a dozen in some places. And that's just unacceptable. What we've got to do, and Brooke Rollins, the Secretary of Agriculture, did an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal this morning where she talked about this. We need to help with immediate support for those egg farmers to help essentially destroy the infected chickens. replace them very quickly, make sure those sites are clean. It's an airborne virus in many cases from wild flocks, so we've got to take dramatic action. And as she said in her op-ed, we need to explore vaccines, which is somewhat controversial, but that protect those birds from this virus, which is coming in from mostly wild geese that are flying over. We got to also make sure it doesn't infiltrate the dairy industry and other forms of agriculture. So this is a really important issue. It requires great partnership between the federal government and the state government. And I've been trying to be a good focused leader on this, working with the Secretary of Agriculture in Pennsylvania and also Brooke Rollins.
Good. And I know that you're talking to farmers about this, and obviously all the controversy around the vaccines for the chickens, and you'll have all those conversations. And I'm confident you guys will come up with a good resolution. The previous administration, all they did was just kill chickens. They had no plan. Yeah. It was just, murder chickens.
And not quickly enough, and not dealing with the fact that this problem keeps repeating itself. So I think with Secretary Rollins there, it's going to be we're going to have a lot of focus on it.
Let's talk about China, Senator McCormick, if we could. Obviously, President Trump saying the 10% tariffs on China can go into effect March 4th. And he put out a lengthy Truth Social about this, about fentanyl. You were talking about this yesterday on Capitol Hill. You were talking about the opioid crisis. I mean, look, somebody was mentioning to me the other day, Philadelphia, and they're saying all those videos of people walking around Kensington like zombies. It's still a problem. And, as much as the border, the crossings, the numbers are down, obviously the cartels are still finding a way to get that fentanyl in. But it originally starts in China, as we all know, and then it comes to Mexico, and then the cartels bring it over the border, and then they ship it out from there.
Yeah. Listen, China is at the root cause of the fentanyl crisis because they send their prefactors, these are the ingredients that go into fentanyl, to Mexico, and the cartels manufacture it, and as you said, send it across the border. And, the Biden administration had, endless months, years of consultation with the Chinese on stopping this, and the Chinese assured the Biden administration that we do that, and they didn't do it. And these prefactors keep coming illicitly, they come illegally, into Mexico, and it's got to stop. And so I completely support this. By the way, this crisis kills 4,000 Pennsylvanians last year from fentanyl, 100,000 nationally. This is the biggest crisis to human life and American way of life that we have. And so I completely support President Trump's, we're going to raise the cost. We're going to punish. This is punitive. We're going to punish China until it changes its behavior. And, we can use tariffs for reciprocity when they're not giving American businesses a fair deal. That's not what this is. This is using tariffs very strategically to stop a very bad behavior on part of the Chinese. Same is true for Mexico. Same may be true for Canada. I think that's smart policy, and I think President Trump's onto something here.
Well, I think there's no question about it. Reciprocal tariffs make sense, especially if you're anti-tariff, because if you're anti-tariff and they're imposing tariffs on us, we impose them back and then the tariffs go away, then everybody wins. So, I mean,
everybody wins, right?
All the sense in the world. Yeah. Let me ask you, Senator McCormick, while I have you, if I could, regarding another very, very important subject, I think, to all of us, which is when thinking about China and thinking about the potential now for expansion with Russia and a partnership there and an alliance with Russia. And, you are the chairman of the subcommittee on foreign policy on the Senate side, which is a fantastic for a freshman senator to get that role is huge. How concerned should we be about that alliance?
I think we should be very concerned. There was I think it was no accident that during the last year of the Biden administration that you simultaneously in 1 week had the Chinese leader in Russia meeting with President Putin. And during that very same week, you had the foreign minister from China meeting with the Ayatollah from Iran. So I think China is our main adversary in the world. And they are building a set of relationships with key adversaries. North Korea. North Korea is currently has troops on the ground in Russia, with Iran, with China. And so that group of adversaries, you know, we have to, as President Trump's doing right now, find ways to have peaceful coexistence with Russia and the dispute in Ukraine. But we also should be very wary that Russia's interest, China's interest, North Korea's interest, Iran's interest, in many ways is in dramatic conflict with ours. And China has been very smart on the world stage of building alliances, using its mercantilist policies in Africa and South America and around the world to build alliances, to get access to raw materials. And they've done that with Iran, with Russia, and with North Korea. And I think we should be very wary of it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point. I think it's something that we don't talk enough about in this country, and that axis, I don't want to say axis of evil, but I'm just saying that axis is certainly concerning for foreign policy, especially as the United States is prepared now to lead the world, really, in exporting oil and natural gas, which is a direct threat to Putin, no question about it. Are you happy that the president ended the approval for Venezuelan oil? I thought that was a very smart move.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the thing that's been amazing about this, I mean, I'm 6 weeks into this job, and I walk out of a meeting, and they say, and the reporters will be standing there, say, what about President Trump's announcement, you know, 15 minutes ago? And I said, I can't keep up. I got to go back to my office and figure out what he's done, because yeah, the boldness, the clarity, and, you know, I was sort of a close observer when President Trump came in office the first time, because my wife worked for him as the Deputy National Security Advisor. And so I have a comparison from 2017 to 2025. And what the difference is I think the sure-footedness of President Trump. He knows exactly what he wants to do. He knows who he wants to do it in terms of the team he wants. He's got a clear agenda, and he's moving with a speed and a forcefulness that I think will serve him well and serve the American people well in delivering on the promises. And that's the thing I'm most proud of, I think, is that the president is very focused on the promises. And if you look at what he's done, he's pretty much done everything he said he was going to do. And I'd like to believe, and I think I'm doing the same thing, doing just what we promised. The American people voted for change, and that's what they're seeing.
You know, before I let you go, I just want to mention very quickly, I was on our mutual friend Dana Perino's podcast last week or so, and she brought you up, and she just commended the fact that you sat down with Senator Fetterman, and you're trying to find wherever you guys can find bipartisan consensus on issues to help Pennsylvania, to get the job done. And that's worth mentioning for sure.
Yeah, well, thanks for saying that. You know, the way I think about it is I wasn't elected to represent Republicans. I was elected to represent every single person. And Pennsylvania is a very diverse state. We got lots of problems, lots of opportunities. Senator Fetterman and I have forged a great relationship on the basis of, you know, let's focus on what we agree on. We probably have lots of disagreements, but there's lots of things we can agree on. And so the funny thing about that was I went over to his house to do an interview with Selena Zito, and he's got these two dogs, and the one dog is a three-legged pit bull named Artie. And so Artie is a very friendly dog. And so in the middle of this interview, he moves over from Fetterman to me and gets up on the couch. And all of a sudden, and Fetterman's like, come on, Artie, are you becoming a Republican? And so so we've got a good relationship and on Israel and anti-Semitism and the need to support working families across Pennsylvania. We're going to find a lot of things to work on together.
Senator Dave McCormick, hey, thanks for making time for us, my friend. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work, and we will talk to you very soon, I hope.
Thanks for having me, Rich. Bye-bye.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, great way to start the show, if you ask me. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Scioli. It's going to be a barn burner today, first of all. The president's going to speak at the White House press conference. I think it's important to dip into these things. Jip in, as Rush used to say, it's the correct term of it. I think it's important to do. Gene Hackman's death. First of all, let me just say right at the outset that there's breaking news on that, where they are saying that it does appear suspicious enough to investigate. So the legendary actor, 94 years old, found dead. His wife's dead. The dog's dead. The thing about this, which is really strange, is that they appear to be dead for quite a while, to the point of like mummification, I heard the term, in their bodies. And so there's a lot of questions around if there was forced entry. I don't know why anybody would want to kill him or his family, but that's what they're looking at right now. Without question, I have to say, Gene Hackman is a legendary actor. Lex Luthor. I mean, you know, I rewatched Superman and Superman 2 with my son Patrick. He's 10 years old. And in preparation for the new Superman movie that's coming out this summer, I wanted to sit down with Patrick and rewatch those movies. And you know, they've aged incredibly well. They really have. I mean, for considering that Superman, the movie, was made in the 70s. Both written, by the way, by Mario Puzo, who wrote The Godfather. But Gene Hackman, undisputably the OG, the best Lex Luthor, his portrayal of that character, witty, funny, sinister, just the perfect blend of it. And of course, I mean, Hoosiers, The French Connection, Birdcage. I could go on. I could spend all day just talking about Gene Hackman's movies, but guy was a phenomenal actor. No question about it. But it was a good bonding moment for me and Patrick to watch him in that role. And I thought that there's other people who tried to play Lex Luthor, and they couldn't pull off, because Gene Hackman had that special blend of charisma. And Hoosiers, which is a movie that we're going to watch this weekend with my son Patrick, because he's getting into basketball now, probably one of the most important, not just a sports film, I mean it is obviously, but just a motivational, you know, you can do it, overcome the odds kind of a movie. So awesome stuff right there. So we'll keep you updated on that as they have more information coming out about this. But that's the breaking news, is that the death is suspicious enough to allow for further investigation. And that's what they're talking about doing right now. Also, more crazy lefty meltdowns over Doge. You heard in the headlines that Doge employees had 15 minutes to pack up their stuff and leave. Yeah, that happens at jobs when you get fired. And many times you don't even get 15 minutes. You are escorted out and they send you your stuff. So that's kind of how it works. This is not unique to government employees. If you work in corporate America, they want you out of there, and they don't want you getting access to your files or emails or anything else, because, you know, you could share that with competitors. And so usually you're escorted out of the building and some guy brings down a box with your stuff where they mail it to you. And, you know, that's just how it goes. So, you know, don't shed a tear for the fact they only had 15 minutes notice to get their stuff together and go. That's more than a lot of people in the private sector get, truly. All right. A lot more to come. Obviously, big story of the hour, though, is the president hosting the prime minister of the United Kingdom at the White House today. Big story brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VanariaDental, VanariaDental.com. We're coming right back.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
French Connection?
Yep.
Well done, my friend. Well done. Excellent. That was a great movie. Man. Popeye Doyle. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. We're happy to have you. 855-839-1210 is the number. Hit me up with your favorite Gene Hackman movie, Gene Hackman scene, whatever you want to do. Just hit me up either on X, on the YouTube chat, or you can hit us up on, you can call the show, 855-839-1210. Feel free to do that. I want to dip in here. The president is speaking with the prime minister of the UK, holding a joint news conference. We're going to dip in here. This very important stuff, talking about Ukraine and peace. And this is hopefully going to be the end of this war. So I think it's important that we take a listen. Let's do it.
Sessions we had were tremendously productive. Most importantly, I provided the prime minister with an update on our efforts to end the bloody and horrible war in Ukraine with Russia, which would never have happened if I were president. That was not going to happen. I promise you that. After 3 years of hellacious conflict, approximately 1 million Ukrainians and Russians have been senselessly killed, but the number, I believe, is much higher than that. Countless schools, hospitals, towns, and beautiful ancient churches have been absolutely obliterated. To begin the process of ending this spiral of death. I had historic back-to-back calls with President Putin, very successful calls, I might add, and President Zelensky, and my team also spoke with the Secretary General of NATO on numerous occasions, and we're working very hard to get that war brought to an end. I think we've made a lot of progress, and I think it's moving along pretty rapidly. And I want to thank all of the people that are here that have been working on it. And we'll let you know what happens. It'll either be fairly soon or it won't be at all. In addition, this week I met with President Macron of France, as you know, and held talks with members of the G7. Tomorrow, the progress toward peace will continue when President Zelensky visits the White House. He'll be here tomorrow.
That was a pain
in the early part of the day,
and
we'll be signing a historic agreement that will make the United States a major partner in developing Ukraine's minerals and rare earths and oil and gases. And we have a great understanding. I think it's going to be great for Ukraine. We're going to be at the site, and we'll be we'll be digging, we must. A big utility in New York, Con Edison, they used to have a sign, dig we must, and we will be digging. But much of the European aid to Ukraine has been sent in the form of loans for which they expect to be paid back, and we didn't have that honor under the Biden administration. He sent money, or just send it money after money after money, and never had any knowledge of ever seeing it back, maybe $300 to $350 billion. But under the breakthrough agreement, very unusual, which everyone said was difficult to get, but it's really very good for Ukraine and very good for us. The American taxpayers will now effectively be reimbursed for the money and good. Hundreds of billions of dollars poured into helping Ukraine defend itself, which by and of itself is a very worthy thing to do. We've paid far more than any other country, and with most of our support, it's been paid in military, the finest weapons anywhere in the world. This includes vast amounts of military hardware, ammunition, and various other things that we now have to start rebuilding our own stockpiles. Additionally, the minerals agreement will provide the basis for a more sustainable future relationship between the United States and Ukraine, and thus stimulate the long-term prosperity that will help the Ukrainians rebuild their country. It's been demolished. And the ruined infrastructure, the infrastructure, as you know, is in very bad shape. In just over 1 month, our administration has already achieved more progress toward peace than years in the other administration, where they did nothing toward peace. They didn't understand what was happening. Our approach is basically common sense. As I said, so many of the things that we do are based on common sense. If you want peace, you have to talk, both sides. As I discussed with Prime Minister Starmer, the next step we're making is toward a very achievable ceasefire. We hope that that can happen quickly, because thousands of young people, in this case, we're not talking about Americans, we're talking about Ukrainians and Russians, are being killed every week, thousands. And it's a rough battlefield. It's a flat piece of land, and the bullet only stops when it hits somebody. And this week, I saw the reports, and it's I don't even want to say what they are, but thousands of people, young, vibrant people died. And we want to stop that. Senseless. Should have never happened. This will lay the groundwork for a long-term peace agreement that will return stability to Eastern Europe and hopefully ensure that such a terrible war will never happen on European soil, or for that matter, anywhere again. It's a horrible thing that's going on. The disaster in Ukraine shows exactly why it's so important for the United Kingdom and other NATO partners to make large investments in their defense capabilities. In many cases, 4% or 5% of GDP would be appropriate. I know that they're raising it. I just read a great article about the work you're doing in the UK as to the military. You're raising it quite a bit, which is a great thing to do for your country. It's a great thing to do. It's sad that we need that, but probably need that. So congratulations on that. I know you got it through. After years of chronic underfunding, there's an urgent need to catch up for some countries. And I want to thank the Prime Minister once again for traveling here today, working together. I believe that we'll once again demonstrate the power of our country's unique friendship. This is indeed a unique friendship. It's been many years, and I think it's only gotten stronger, and we will make sure that it stays that way. We're going to have a great trade agreement. One way or the other, we're going to end up with a very good trade agreement for both countries. And we're working on that as we speak. I think we'll have the confines. I think we'll have something maybe even in terms of possibilities agreed to very shortly. JD's working on a vice president, and Scott, and I'm just looking at this old friend Mike. You're going to work on it. Everyone's going to work on it. We'll see if we can do something pretty quickly, but we're going to make some great trade agreements with the UK and with the Prime Minister, and it'll happen very quickly. So I just want to thank you again, and please thank King Charles for the invite, and I look forward to your giving our acceptance on behalf of the United States of America. Thank you very
Let's
much.
Let's jump out of this for a minute while the Prime Minister speaks. We'll jump back in when the President takes questions, because I mean this could go on for a long time, and there's a lot I have to say about things. But they also spoke in the Oval Office earlier today, so there's a lot of audio we have of that as well. I'll just say this, that the Prime Minister said he handed the president a letter from the king, and apparently now, allegedly, in that letter, it was the king begging the president not to deport Harry and Meghan, and also apologizing for burning down the White House. So good. I mean, it's about time that they said that. The fact that this war in Ukraine is coming to an end is a big deal. This is historic. This is a big freaking deal here, that we're about to have peace with Ukraine and Russia. This is going to be finalized tomorrow at the White House, and this is going to come to an end. You know, and in all the media meltdowns right now about Doge and the freaking left losing their minds about Doge, nonsense too. You know, every day it's today, like I mentioned, it was the 15 minutes till you have to clear out your stuff, which happens in corporate America all the time. But what they're not talking about, of course, is they're not talking about the fact that we are on the cusp here of peace. And that the reason for that is because they don't want to make for a guy that they kept saying was Hitler and a dictator. And he's now bringing about peace, something Joe Biden was never even interested in doing. Remember, Biden, all he cared about was just sending money to the military-industrial complex to keep going over to Ukraine. They had no intention of stopping that war. And if Kamala Harris had won, what you'd be hearing right now is a press conference about how we're giving Ukraine another $100 billion, and we stand with Ukraine, and that money would all go to the military-industrial complex. It would all be shipped over to Ukraine. That's what we'd be hearing right now. We would not be hearing about peace. We would not be hearing about a mineral deal. We would not be hearing about getting our money back. Nothing. None of those things. It would just not happen. You know that, and I know that. And so they don't want to cover that, because now Trump is a peacemaker. I mean, coming into the White House, he's been there a month, and we're going to have peace. We're going to end this war, which is remarkable. It's remarkable. And it's exactly what he said would happen. And the problem also for the media is they've spent so much time lying about this man and saying that he's a Russian puppet, and he's Putin's buddy and everything else. And here he is tomorrow welcoming the president of Ukraine, Zelensky, to the White House and achieving a mineral rights deal, which is going to lead to the end of this war. So they can't give that positive coverage either, because it goes against the narrative that he's this Russian stooge who's on Putin's payroll. And obviously, you know, the Hitlerian Trump bringing peace to Europe, not looking to partner with Putin to conquer it. It's amazing stuff here. And it's important to note, Trump said, I have a very good relationship with President Putin. That's a good thing. That should be a good thing. If you think back to the 1980s, when President Ronald Reagan decided, hey, look, we got to deal with this Cold War here, and we have to take down the evil empire, but we're going to do it by having a friendship, a relationship with them. And yeah, outspending the bejesus out of them, too. But then he was not afraid to go over there. He was not afraid to welcome them here. And ultimately, that would lead to the end of communism. I think having good relationships is a good thing. That used to be something we admired in this country. It used to be something that we said was good. Wow, you know, our president having a positive relationship with a country that could be our enemy versus having our kids hide under their desks, afraid they're going to be hit with a nuclear missile. That's good. So I'm happy to see this achievement. I think it's excellent. There's going to be a lot more said. Tomorrow's show is obviously going to be very focused on this, clearly. And I have to say, I got to give Vice President J.D. Vance a lot of credit. He was asked a question today at the Oval Office about free speech in Europe. And he didn't back down. He said it. Look, I understand our relationship with the United Kingdom, and I got a lot of problems with the Brits over the burning down the White House thing. But in all seriousness, they do have a major free speech problem over there. They've got hate speech laws, and they arrest people for saying things. And the prime minister says that we're very proud of our free speech record. Their free speech record is, in my opinion, abhorrent. It really is. And I think that there have been some positive things that they've done, like ending transgender surgeries for minors and things like that, the nonsense, you know, mutilation of kids. But truly, their speech record, their speech laws in the UK, if this guy, if Starmer here, the prime minister, is committed to peace, to free speech, they got to clean up some stuff here. Let me play you this clip. This is the vice president today who was asked a question about free speech and his comments that he made last week overseas regarding freedom of speech. And he doubled down today, and good for him for doing so. Cut number two.
In his remarks at the Munich Security Conference, Vice President Vance condemned free speech violations in the UK, particularly. Could you respond?
I have an idea. We have the man right here. Come on. Let's go, JD. We're putting you on stage.
Great. Look, I said what I said, which is that we do have, of course, a special relationship with our friends in the UK and also with some of our European allies. But we also know that there have been infringements on free speech that actually affect not just the British. Of course, what the British do in their own country is up to them, but also affect American technology companies and, by extension, American citizens. So that is something that we'll talk about today at lunch.
Good. And hopefully there's improvements in that. All right. The president's taking some questions now. Let's dip back into the press conference here.
Thank you once again.
Thank you very much. What a beautiful accent. I would have been president 20 years ago if I had that accent.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's see here. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Earlier today, you told me that you believe that foreign countries pay tariffs, but Americans who are concerned about higher prices believe, as most people do, that they're paid by consumers and importers when they import things into this country. Can you explain how you came to this belief that foreign governments are paying tariffs? And for the Prime Minister, did you discuss with President Trump his repeated statements of desire to annex Canada? And has the king expressed any concern over the president's apparent desire to remove one of his realms from his control?
So I'll go ahead. The first part, the tariffs are necessary because we've been treated very unfairly by many, many countries, including our friends, friend and foe. But we've been treated very unfairly in trade. At levels that nobody's really ever seen before, and especially under the Biden administration, they really took advantage of the United States. I put massive tariffs on China during my 4 years. We had the best economy in the history of our country, maybe the best economy in the history of the world. And I used tariffs to even things up. And in particular with China, we took in hundreds of billions of dollars, and we had no inflation. And it's a myth. It's a myth that's put out there by foreign countries that really don't like paying tariffs, and especially to even up. So we've been treated badly by a lot. We're using tariffs. And I find, and you just have to look at the numbers, but I find that it's not about inflation. It's about fairness. And the inflation for us has not existed. And I don't think it's going to exist. We're going to bring our car industry back. We're going to bring our chips back. We're going to bring so many things back to our country, including pharmaceuticals and drugs. And the thing that's going to get us there is tariffs. And I say often, it's my favorite word in the dictionary, but I always preface that by saying now, because I got into a lot of trouble with the fake news where they say that's not good. So I say God, love, family, wife. They're all my favorite words. But tariff is about number four or five on the list. But I will tell you, it's going to make our country rich, and it's going to stop us from being a laughingstock all over the world, because we have been taken advantage of like no country has ever been taken advantage of. Thank you very much. And
look, we had a really good discussion, a productive discussion, a good discussion, as a result of which our teams are now going to be working together on an economic deal. Our teams are going to be working together on security in Ukraine. You mentioned Canada. I think you're trying to find a divide between us that doesn't exist. We're the closest of nations, and we had very good discussions today, but we didn't
That's
discuss
enough.
Canada.
Thank you. Please. Go ahead. Go ahead. Yes. Thank you.
Hey. Hi, Natasha Clark from RBC. Mr. President, you've said you're working on a new trade deal with Britain, which we, of course, welcome. President Obama once said Britain was at the back of the queue for that trade deal. Where are we now? When do you think we're going to see that? And, Prime Minister, the BBC has today admitted serious flaws over the recent Gaza coverage, suggestions of payments made to people linked to Hamas. Does the BBC still have your trust? Thank you.
Hmm. Well, they didn't do well with President Obama. He'd never got a lot of things done. And he didn't get a trade deal done that was of any importance or magnitude. We have we've had great discussions on trade, and I think we're going to have a deal done rather quickly as it can be done. We're going to have something, I think, rather quickly. We expect to do that. Okay? Please.
On the BBC, look, I've been concerned about the program in question. The Secretary of State had a meeting with the BBC. I think it was yesterday. It could have been the day before. Thank you.
Jeff, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Pardon me. Mr. President, do you support Article 5 of the NATO Treaty? And are you concerned that it might be triggered if European peacekeeping forces end up in Ukraine?
I support it. I don't think we're going to have any reason for it. I think we're going to have a very successful peace. And I think it's going to be a long-lasting peace. And I think it's going to happen hopefully quickly. If it doesn't happen quickly, it may not happen at all. And we want it for two reasons. Number one, I want to see on a humane basis, I want to see soldiers stop getting shot, because largely it's soldiers now. Towns have been obliterated, but it's largely that. And I don't want to pay billions and billions and billions of dollars, nor does the prime minister or anybody else, on a senseless war that should have never happened. And we're going to get it taken care of. But I think it's going to be a peace that's going to be long lasting. Do you have a question for the prime minister?
Thank you. Mr. Prime Minister, you were asking the president today about a backstop for Europe if the peacekeeping force ends up in Ukraine. Did you feel like you got a satisfying answer for yourself and for Europe? And Mr. President, if you want to comment on that as well, please do.
Yeah, I thought we had a very productive discussion. Obviously, as the president says, the deal has to come first. But yes, our teams are going to be talking about how we make sure that deal sticks, is lasting and enforced. So our teams will be talking about that.
Okay. Please, Blue.
Mr. President, some experts think it could take more than a decade to mine the precious minerals from Ukraine. How much should the U.S. expect to receive, and when do you expect to see that come to fruition?
Well, we're never going to know that answer, but by our being in Ukraine and doing the exploration and also the digging and taking the rare earth, which we need in our country very badly, we'll be doing a substantial amount of work, probably about at least what we have in there. And we hope to be able to do that. You never know when it comes to that. You know, you dig and maybe things aren't there like you think they're there. But we'll be spending a lot of time there. It'll be great for Ukraine. It's like a huge economic development project. So it'll be good for both countries. Okay? Please.
Prime Minister, you've talked about putting British soldiers' boots on the ground in Ukraine in the event that President Trump succeeds with his peace deal. But can you do that without a firm assurance that America will have our back in the form of some kind of security guarantee were Putin to breach that agreement? And, Mr. President, tomorrow you're seeing President Zelensky to sign this deal on minerals and energy that could be hugely important to the United States. Will you take the opportunity to apologize to him for calling him a dictator while praising Vladimir Putin, who is a dictator?
Stupid question.
Well, Robert, let me start by saying I've been really clear today and previously that I think that European countries, including the United Kingdom, need to step up in our own defence and security. We've been doing that in recent days. You saw the announcement we made on spending just the other day. In addition to that, I've made it clear that the United Kingdom will play its full part in ensuring that if there's a deal, and we hope there is a deal in Ukraine, that that is a lasting deal that sticks. And we're obviously working with other European countries on that, France and NATO in particular. But I'm hosting 18 countries on Sunday to further our discussions. You heard from the president this morning that, you know, as historically has always been the case, we have each other's backs. And today we've been talking about the deal, how that will be a lasting deal. And coming out of this, our teams will now be talking in detail about that.
And I think we're going to have a very good meeting tomorrow, 11 o'clock. And I think we're going to have a very good meeting tomorrow morning. We're going to get along really well. Okay? We have a lot of respect. I have a lot of respect for him. We've given him a lot of equipment and a lot of money, but they have fought very bravely, no matter how you figure. They have really fought. Somebody has to use that equipment, and they have been very brave in that sense. Yeah, please. Go ahead.
The Gaza ceasefire deal is nearing an end this Saturday, and there's been some worry that phase two might never get there. Do you believe that phase two of the ceasefire in Gaza will come to fruition? And have you spoken to Netanyahu about it? And for the Prime Minister, this peacekeeping deal has been pushed forward by the UK and France as well. Have you been in discussions with any other European countries to join this initiative? And are you expecting Commonwealth countries to also join the effort? Thank you.
So we're working very hard in the Middle East and Gaza and all of the problems. And it's been going on for years and years and centuries and centuries. It's a tough neighborhood, but it could be a very beautiful neighborhood. And I think we're going to come up with some pretty good solutions. But phase one is almost complete. We've had some people that have been very seriously injured, very seriously hurt, both physically and mentally. They've come out of there very, very, some of them in very, very bad shape. It's shocking. Many young people aren't in bad shape. Young people are strong, healthy. They don't die. People have come out dead, young people and old people. It's a rough situation, but I think we're going to make it much better. And I think that we've had a huge impact on that since we've been in just the 4 weeks. I think we've had a huge impact on Gaza, the Middle East, and we have some pretty good talks going on concerning lots of other people that are going to make it better. So we'll see what happens. Nobody really knows, but we'll see what happens. But I think we've
all right, we're going to jump out of this. Congressman Scott Perry is going to join us next. We'll pause this, though, and we can come back to it if necessary. So you don't have to worry about that. But I don't want to blow off the congressman since he's taking time out of his day to talk to us about the budget. Very important topic. We're going to do that straight ahead. So don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.